This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Good morning. It is time for this week's broadcast of Worcester Magazine, your local connection to the news, views, and events happening in Worcester. Today, we will be reading from the July 31st, 2026 edition of Worcester Magazine. This program is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. I'm Julie Standrovich, reading with Catherine Thornton. Thank you for joining us. And we begin, as usual, with Wisteria. Worcester Schools Summer Eats Serves Kids by Meg Trigolo. On a warm Friday afternoon by Crompton Park, a long line of children and their parents and guardians stretched from the entrance to the park swimming pool to a white box truck that was parked on the sidewalk bearing the symbol of an apple and the words Worcester Nutrition. As part of the nationwide Summer Food Service Program, also known as Summer Eats, Worcester Public Schools Nutrition Department provides free breakfast and lunch for children throughout the city, and many of the kids playing in the Crompton Park pool were looking for something tasty to eat. "What can I tell you? We're just here," said Summer Eats worker, distributing chicken salad sandwiches, fresh fruit, and milk cartons. "We come here every day and do what we've got to do." Over the course of an average weekday in summer, WPS's nutrition department trucks visit more than 20 public parks, libraries, and schools to distribute hundreds of meals to children and teens for free without requiring ID or enrollment in any program. WPS Nutrition Director Danielle Collins said in her previous job at the Massachusetts Department of Elementary and Secondary Education's Nutrition Office, she oversaw many Summer Eats programs within schools and YMCA locations elsewhere in the state, but she prefers these open sites where anyone under 18 can walk up and get something to eat. According to Collins, the program's busiest spot is the Central Community Branch YMCA on Main Street, where about 200 children eat on an average day. "Here in Worcester, it's actually a much better way of approaching meal service," Collins said. "The YMCA is an open site, and what that means is anyone enrolled in a program can go and receive a free meal, but also folks that are just visiting the YMCA or in the general area can come and enjoy a meal for free. I find that it's much more accessible." Collins said as part of her duties as nutrition director, she visits multiple Summer Eats distribution sites a day. The first to open for breakfast is the Greendale Family Branch YMCA, which serves it from 8 to 8:30 a.m., and the last to close for lunch is the Worcester Housing Authority, which serves sandwiches and vegetables from 2 to 2:15 p.m. "I was at the Worcester Public Library, and the kids come outside and enjoy a meal and then head back in for whatever program they have scheduled at the library," Collins said. At the city parks, kids are involved playing soccer and doing all kinds of wonderful athletic events and games. Some locations, like Crompton Park and the Worcester Public Library's Main and Goddard branches, only served lunch, while others, like El Buen Samaritano Food Program, Logan Field Park, and University Park, offer breakfast as well. This year, Worcester's Summer Eats program has added two new locations, providing lunch to children enrolled in summer camp at the Ecotarium and the Jewish Community Center. Collins said those two distribution sites are closed, meaning only enrolled children eat for free there, but that's only because there is not a safe place outside where we would be able to accommodate both the kids in the camp and the general public. Among the city's other closed sites are 11 of its public schools, which serve free breakfast and lunch to enrolled summer students, just like they do during the regular school year. It's a program with some 60 years of ancestry. Free meals for children in American public schools first became law within the National School Lunch Act of 1946. What would eventually become the Summer Food Service Program began in the late 60s and was permanently authorized in 1975. The need for programs such as this has been growing steadily over the past few years. According to the Greater Boston Food Bank, food insecurity in Massachusetts rose to 40% in 2025, with child-level food insecurity rising to 37%, up from 33% the previous year. According to an article in the Telegram and Gazette, there was a 32% jump in 2024 in the number of households served by the agencies that partner with the Pernay Family Health Service Food Bank in Worcester. When the Worcester Public School System was bracing for the possible eradication of SNAP benefits in October, 72% of WPS students, or nearly 18,000 students, were classified as low-income students. The same percentage increase, 32%, applies to the number of people served by the agency, 594,005 from July 1, 2023 through the end of March, compared to 451,602 from July 1, 2022 to March 31, 2023. Though the Massachusetts Department of Elementary and Secondary Education operates the state's Summer Eats program, the funding is all federal, and Collins said in spite of the sweeping cuts to social services the Trump administration has made since early 2025, Summer Eats is still safe. What does change is the number of children who eat at Summer Eats sites each day, and Collins said that all depends on the weather. We had a hot spell at the end of June during our first few days, and that was busier than ever. And then the following week had rain and terrible weather. Our numbers were much lower on those days, Collins said. During the hot weather days, our pool sites and splash pad sites have been busier than usual. That's always the case, but the weather is unpredictable. Earlier that day in Elm Park, around 11 a.m., another white box truck sat at the side of Russell Street near the playground. A pair of cafeteria workers, both of whom declined to speak with Worcester Magazine, passed out prepackaged lunches and milk cartons. One box, which contained fruit and leafy greens, went to a teenage boy who arrived smiling with a basketball under one arm. A full list of distribution locations and times is available at worcesterschools.org. And now for a first-person article by Joe Fusco Jr., titled Joe Fusco Jr. Faces Surgery with a Dose of His Wife's Optimism. My wife Cindy approached my scheduled spinal surgery with the same glass three-quarter full attitude that she employs for most of life's stumbling blocks. You'll be so much better off in the long run, she told me before a bedtime hug and kiss the night before the procedure. With my quarter full glass attitude, now at warp speed, I insisted we go over the When Joe Dies instructions I keep in a Randy Newman album sleeve, then went all in on the melodrama. I just don't think with this 14th surgery that I'm in it for the long run, but I'll try to stay in the race, I told my wife, before hugging her tightly, kissing her passionately, then putting on my CPAP machine and dental mouthguard before weeping softly into my pillow. Cindy is Yang to my Yin, the Pippi Longstocking to my Eeyore, the Wonder Woman to my Buster Keaton. She can make friends with the person next to her on a 3-hour plane trip to Florida to the point where they're exchanging Nicholas Sparks novels as the plane lands. Meanwhile, for 3 hours, I've been battling the smallest man in front of me who keeps pushing his seat back against my longish legs. Once, while we were vacationing in Las Vegas, I tried to emote my wife's belief in the goodness of humankind for an entire day. My quest ended around 8 p.m. in the restroom of the Luxor Casino when I noticed that the man in the urinal next to me had a tall boy beer perched on top of the porcelain. I didn't know you can order a drink in here, I joked to my new best friend. He turned to his right and peed on my shoes. Cindy believes things happen for a reason. God is benevolent, and good people should come out on top. She stood up and shouted, "No!" at the end of the movie No Country for Old Men. I always plan for the worst and hope for something less bad, pray in emergencies like my upcoming 14th surgery, but know I probably don't deserve a listen, and that happy endings are happenstance. Maybe being two sides of the same coin has kept Cindy and I together for over 40 years. When her faith in humans gets shaken at times, I'm here to remind her that we're mostly morons and don't deserve her consideration. When I'm complaining about life's unfairness, she reminds me of our 4 grown successful children and our 10 awesome grandkids. It's a lose-win situation that seems to work well. By the way, the spine surgery went okay. The doctors and nurses at Hahnemann Day Surgery were pleasant, patient, and thorough. I got ginger ale and graham crackers in the recovery room. It made my glass almost 3/8 full. Joe Fusco Jr. is a Worcester County humorist and stand-up poet. He hosts open mics at the Richard Fox Poetry Series at Root and Press Cafe and the Poetry Extravaganza at the Mill in West Boylston. He teaches Humor 101 at various senior venues in central Massachusetts. And now, some Poetry Town. This one is called The Mourning Dove by Joanne Johnson. You mourn for all of us as you call through the trees, sharing our sorrow. Your haunting coo, comforting, wailing mothers that have lost their children. You mourn for all the widows left behind, witnessing the last breath of their loving mate, never to feel the whisper of their endearing voice brush against their ear again. A symbol of peace and love, a hypnotic reverberation as you quell the burning embers of grief, keeping them from becoming a raging fire. A rhythmic soundtrack comforting fathers of sons that dutifully sacrificed their lives, never to caress their sons' faces again. Instead, holding a photo and folded flag, you are the embodiment of grace. We yearn to hear your loving voice, accompanied by the voices of the loved ones that have left on a pair of quiet wings. Joanne Johnson is a poet in the local area. She read this poem at the Blessing Box and Turquoise Table dedication in memory of her son, Joey Johnson, in a ceremony held July 12th at the opening day of the Community Teaching Garden Literacy Project. And now we're going to send you over to Catherine for some more articles from Worcester Magazine.
We begin this morning with the feature article by Richard Duckett, Making the Past Matter, One Song at a Time. Sultana to explore history and legends through song in Webster. Sultana is the duo of musicians and songwriters John and Lee Waterman of Haverhill. What's in a name? Music is part of what makes us a culture. We have experiences in history that we share, for good or not so good, but we're still sharing it, John said. In that spirit, Sultana will perform a free program, History and Legends Through Song, on August 6th at the Gladys E. Kelly Public Library in Webster. The program is supported in part by a grant from the Webster Culture Council through the Mass Cultural Council. Sultana takes its name from a commercial steamboat that exploded and sank on the Mississippi River on April 27, 1865, killing 1,164 people in what remains as the worst maritime disaster in U.S. history. John's song, Sultana, which tells the story of the tragedy, was selected to be featured at the Sultana Museum in Marion, Arkansas. John and Lee also took the name for their duo. History and Legends Through Song is part of a series, Live Music Making History Live, that John created in 2018 with the belief that history and music go together, good and bad. A big fan of history. For centuries, history was passed down as entertainment through songs, storytelling, and theater. It's kind of odd in modern times that we got away from that, John said in a recent phone interview. I've always been a big fan of history. History and Legends Through Song consists mostly of original songs and history narration and slides, exploring a rotating selection of intriguing characters, events, and legend, ranging from ancient Mesopotamia, Arthurian legend, and medieval battle, to Massachusetts history, including the captivity story of Hannah Dustin, the Old West, World War I, and beyond. The songs are written by John along with an occasional traditional tune, he said. Other shows in the Live Music Making History Live series include a journey through the roots of American popular music and veterans, and Railroad in Song, which was presented July 21st at Oxford Free Public Library. Upcoming will be a program devoted to America's 250th anniversary, which shows in the fall. John is originally from Arizona and has a master's degree in popular music history from Prescott College in Prescott, Arizona. He's lived most of his adult life in New England and 90% of that in Massachusetts, He's also a licensed history teacher in the state. John said he had a speech problem earlier in life, but it's not noticeable in talking with him now. He's performed blues, rock, and country standards. Meanwhile, I was a songwriter. I had lots of material that was history as a theme. I played acoustic guitar and wrote songs. I tried writing about myself. It bored me, he said. Maybe I should focus on this. Live Music Making History Live project seemed like a good way to combine his love of history with songwriting. The first program was a journey through the roots of American popular music. I always wanted to try and do something good and make a difference. Maybe this is the way to do it. At one point, I thought about commercial songwriting, but I'm doing these programs and it's great. Similarly, I'm not really into overt political stuff. I got to thinking maybe I should focus on this. John and Lee became a couple in 2020, and she came on board for the project as well. Lee is a classically trained guitarist and singer who formerly fronted the Rhode Island band Alien Tesh. She's an artist and graduate of the School of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. It's been really exciting, really fun, John said, of the two of them developing the programming. We spent a lot of time together working on the music. It's supposed to be fun. Also, the storylines and slides, which are shown sometimes during the song, sometimes during the narrative, he said. The programs are not storytelling. I'm hesitant to call it a lecture. It's entertainment. It's supposed to be fun. But obviously, it's factual. One might think these programs would be a good fit at high schools. I wish, John said. I've done a couple of schools. I don't really know the way in. He said he boiled one program down for a show for fifth graders. I tried to make it relevant. I'm not sure it was. A Vermont school teacher organized a field trip for a performance, and that got a good response. As for the college circuit, I've looked into it. So much of our entertainment world is who you know, John said. We do historical societies and museums and libraries, VFW halls and special events. Last year, there were 80 performances all across Massachusetts and in other New England states. In central Massachusetts, the performances are often supported by cultural grants, he noted. It's been going really well. I would think if someone doesn't enjoy history, they couldn't come in the first place, he said. But people seem really enthused and seem to really enjoy it. So that's Sultana, History and Legends Through Song, 6:30 p.m. August 6th at the Community Room at the Gladys E. Kelly Public Library on Lake Street in Webster, and that is free. More from the music scene by Meg Trogolo in her Listen Up column, Forever and Now on Cody's Porch debut album. Forever is composed of nows. 'Tis not a different time, the iconic Amherst poet Emily Dickinson once wrote. Though the poem containing that phrase isn't her best known, so many other writers and artists have been struck by the way she expressed the importance of being present in the moment that you still see the words all over the place, including as the title of the band Cody's Porch's debut studio album. Cody's Porch singer-guitarist Maynard Cusky first read it when a character in John Green's novel Paper Towns quoted it, and he and his bandmates found that for an album all about growing up and the passage of time, Forever is composed of nows, was perfect. All four members of Cody's Porch are from northern Worcester County. Cusky from Gardner's, singer-guitarist Mason Boyce from Princeton, singer-bassist Tyler Provost from Rutland, drummer James McGarry from Holden. And all four are in their late teens and early 20s, with the oldest, Boyce, having graduated from high school in 2023. In spring 2025, Boyce, who is on track to graduate from Fitchburg State University next winter, was taking a music technology class to fill a general education requirement, and what would eventually become Cody's Porch began as a school project. When it comes to playing an instrument, I've only been playing for as long as we've been a band, but I knew I had friends like Maynard and Tyler who could play music, and I thought it would be a lot more fun than making an electronic preset song for my final. To write about feelings of unfulfillment. The record starts with the crunchy, loud guitar riff that begins Your Disgrace, and in comes the rest of the band, almost too loud for their recording equipment. and time for Kusky to vent his frustrations at living in the shadow of someone else's bad reputation. Say it to my face. That's okay to be ashamed. I've lost the race to your disgrace, stuck in the shadow of your parade. Anesia, one of Boyce's tracks, is about two things that, depending on when and how you grew up, you'll either be surprised and dismayed at the existence of or immediately find relatable. His narrator is mostly grappling with the strong societal pressure to have a perfect life at a young age. Another year just passed. What can I show for it? Try my hardest. I'm falling short. But there's also a nod to the recurring surprise of each birthday as an adult, when as a teenager you had reason to assume you wouldn't make it that long. I started it right around my 21st birthday, and that song was a way to write about feelings of unfulfillment. You're getting older, and you feel like you're moving towards something, but it never gets there. You never gain the fulfillment you're wanting. Pressure and changes. On Paul Soup, the band songwriting trio of Boyce, Kusky, and Provost all look back a few years in time at teenage desperation to fit in. And once Boyce and Provost finish singing, all four dive into a loud double-time breakdown. It's about societal pressure growing up, especially in high school where you want to do everything you can to fit in as much as possible. The realization during or after the fact, this stuff probably isn't so great for me, but I want to do it because I want to fit in so badly. This column already took a listen to Last Day to Decide earlier in the year when the band released it, and Distant Memories together as their debut single under the name Many Kids Take Meds, but with the extra context that Provost write it about the speed at which life changes when you're in your late teens and early 20s. It sounds fuller. I titled it that, referring to the last days of summer, leading into the new college season, when things are changing really quickly and there's not a lot of time to get used to it, Provost said. It's about how relationships can change throughout graduating high school and going to college, and the feeling of trying to get used to those new emotions that you never experienced before. Stillness by the Train Tracks. On the spoken word, Salivagavant, which the Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines as solitary wanderer. Boyce takes inspiration from a time in his life during which he was having suicidal thoughts and could only find solace alone next to, and sometimes on top of, some train tracks that run through the woods near where he lives. I've dealt with depression on and off through my life. It's derived from a place I was in a while ago where I wanted to sit on the train track and see what happens throughout the night. He and Kusky wrote the song while sitting by those same train tracks, and on the track you could hear the sound of the forest, which they recorded nearby. The idea was somebody having hard times at home, didn't feel like they were fitting in, couldn't find support from people around them, could only feel ease from nature around them at the train tracks. And there's that underlining tone of hope that the train does come, Boyce said. I don't seem to sleep right without our dimly lit skies, your cold embrace as I wait. I wait for your light to brighten my sky, to make me feel fine just once. It's the only thing I'll ask of you, he says on the song. Maybe today you'll come and greet me one last time. It's about what the whole album's about. The slow-building instrumental Different View leads into Where You Lie, and Provost originally wrote both with another friend who gave the band the green light to use the song on the album about losing friends and the clarity that comes afterwards when you realize they weren't the kind of person you wanted to be around anyway, but you were sticking with them because you were so familiar with them. Distant Memories opens with the album's brightest, sunniest guitar riff, and a line sung by Kusky that originally started as a silly aside during a session. Shot back at me like a rubber band. When we were writing it, the first lyric was a joke. We said, wait, we could use that, Kusky said. In the greater scheme of things, it's about what the whole album's about. People moving on to different things, and there's nothing you can really do about it. You just have to sit there and deal with it. On the album closer, Junk Drawer, Kusky starts singing alone all about holding on to your past holds you back and it doesn't let you go farther. If you're too worried about your past, you'll never be able to move on from it and change. I'm lost in the past, and I'm over it. I know things change, but it's so different. I reach into my junk drawer and pull out the keys of what there and what I could be. Eventually, his three bandmates join him on that chorus, and the track ends with Cusky's guitar slipping quietly away into one last major chord before another now arrives. Two things to do that might interest you. Why not go out to lunch? The weekly Out to Lunch Farmers Market takes on the dog days of summer, August 5th, during National Farmers Market Week, with live music from Latin rock band Agua Fresca, who will be playing the music of famed Puerto Rican salsa band La Sonora Ponciana on the Worcester Common that afternoon. You'll find Worcester area fresh produce, local goods, information on community organizations that can connect you with what you need. Out to Lunch Festival and Farmers Market, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on August 5th, Worcester Common on Main Street, and that is free. And Curtain Up in Uxbridge. Blackstone Valley Music and Performance Arts Collaborative, a community music school and nonprofit organization in Uxbridge, will present its first ever summer musical theater production, Rent School Edition, for a three-performance run August 7th to 9th at Uxbridge High School. Rent School Edition is an adaptation of Ralph Larson's rock musical intended to retain the dramatic intent of the groundbreaking show, without the struggles of young artists, with minimal changes, so that many schools can perform the piece. The cast is bringing sheer grit and heart, said Tobias Duke, BVMPAC Music Theater Director. Blackstone Valley Music and Performance Arts Collaborative, 7 p.m. on August 7th and 8th, 2 p.m. on August 9th at Uxbridge High School on Quaker Highway in Uxbridge. That performance is $20 and $15 for students and seniors. And now today's cover story, A Passion for the Bass.
You are listening to Worcester Magazine, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. And now it's time for this week's cover story, of which there are actually two, along the theme of stepping back into history. The first one is titled All's Renaissance Fair in Love and Ralph's Rock Diner by Meg Trigolo. When the clock strikes noon, August 1st, the castle gates will open and squires, princesses, and mythical creatures will all rush through, ready to spend a day watching royal spectacle outdoors and only leaving to grab the next cold ale from the tavern. That's right, it's the second annual King Ralph's Renaissance Fair, which will take over Ralph's Rock Diner long into the night to bring delightful, historically inaccurate entertainment to the townspeople of the Worcester realm. I think the people of Worcester really go gaga for a Renaissance Fair, said organizer Ryan McArdle, who put together the first King Ralph's Festival last year. What blew me away was that everyone really went all in on it right away. Everyone came down in costumes, everyone was acting in character, and everyone was having a good time. A $30 cover gets you in for the entire day, from noon to 2 a.m. If you're wondering whether to expect more of a traditional Renaissance Fair vibe or more of a rock and roll atmosphere, take Worcester Hot Dog Safari founder Tom Mahoney's word for it. Worcester always has more of a Shrek kind of a vibe in all things it does. In fact, one of the day's big events will be a 7 p.m. wrestling match run by Worcester promoters Beyond Wrestling between two competitors dressed as the 2001 animated classic's unlikely hero, Shrek, and its terrible haircut-bearing villain, Lord Farquaad. Ralph's has a special air about it, McArdle said. It's a place for the freaks and weirdos, and I think this fest caters more towards that than maybe the showmanship of King Richard's Fair in Carver. For instance, consider the jousting competition, a fundraiser for the Worcester Hot Dog Safari and Worcester County Food Bank that will begin at 1 p.m. It has nothing to do with the jousting contests of old, where knights used lances to knock each other from their horses, but everything to do with a mechanical bull that will be sitting outside the bar. You have a giant lance in the shape of a hot dog that you have to hold on to with one hand, and the other hand has to be on the bull, Mahoney said. You have to ride the bull for as long as you can before you fall off. It's addicting. McArdle, who plays guitar in the metal band High Command, already had plenty of events at Ralph's under his belt before putting together the first King Ralph's Fair last year. Not only does he book regular concerts there, but also organizes the yearly haunted house that takes over the venue just before Halloween. McArdle said the set designer and builder who turns Ralph's into a horror show every October is now preparing to turn the place into something completely different. "We have some gates being built. We have some stocks you can get your head put in. We've got castle walls." The Woot Nanny Comedy Group will host an all-genders-welcome kilt competition at 4 p.m., which McArdle said was a tantalizing hit last year, preceded by a 2 p.m. medieval-themed dating show where contestants can find the hero or wench that you so desire, which will take place on a 70s game show-style set. Live music will be running throughout the afternoon. More than 25 art and craft vendors will pack the area, and the Mama Roo food truck, or as McArdle temporarily dubbed it, Lord Mama Roo, will be slinging turkey legs and other fair-inspired fare. At 3 p.m., a live reptile show will take place, which McArdle said was inspired by the more wild and woolly elements of King Richard's Fair in years past. "I remember going to King Richard's Fair as a kid and seeing the tiger show and thinking that was really amazing, but we can't really bring tigers into Ralph's, so reptiles are the next best thing," McArdle said. At 5 p.m., Boston Armored Combat Club North Horde will arrive in the ring in literal shining armor to demonstrate what fighting looked like in medieval and Renaissance Europe, using axes and swords to, as McArdle put it, whack each other silly. "As the sun goes down," McArdle said, "Boston DJ duo Glitter Boys, who have played Ralph's several times, will take over for a disco dance party, because the 70s are always the same no matter what century you're in, and the revelry will continue long into the night." The Hot Dog Safari Joust comes 2 weeks ahead of this year's Worcester Hot Dog Safari on August 15th, and though the winner gets a cash prize, most of the money from competitors' $10 donations goes toward putting on the event, which raises funds for the Greater Worcester Food Bank and all the smaller local food pantries that the food bank supports. "A lot of that comes from a greater need in the community and the nation as a whole, so we want to answer that need with fun events where people can really come out and get a sense of community," Mahoney said. "If this year is anything like last year, many festival goers will find a sense of community through dressing up in medieval-inspired outfits, be it period-accurate clothing, high fantasy cosplay, or just a goofy take on the era. Last year, I was looking out into the crowd, and I saw some people with dulcimers and some people dressed as hobbits," Mahoney said. "We did see some pretty amazing costumes from people who go to the Renaissance fairs themselves." For Mahoney, though, the best thing about last year's inaugural King Ralph's Renaissance Fair wasn't the costumes. It was the realization that all the hard work he, McArdle, and other collaborators had put into their newest creative gamble was paying off right before his eyes. "As these events get bigger, they get more exciting, but there's something you can't beat about that first morning on the first day when you think, I don't know if anyone's going to show up, and then they start rolling in with capes and swords and costumes," Mahoney said. That sunny day in 2025 did also provide him with a cautionary tale, which he hopes this year's costume revelers will learn something from. "I wanted to go more Renaissance, and I went with a wig that was half bald cap, half bowl cut, and that didn't offer me the sun protection I've often have on the hot dog safari, so I got pretty cooked," Mahoney said. "Even though it didn't exist in medieval times, people should put on some sunblock." And now for the second of the two cover stories. This one is titled Old Sturbridge Village's Redcoats and Rebels Bring Revolutions to Life by Meg Trigolo. Old Sturbridge Village will echo with the sounds of fife and drum music and musket fire August 1st and 2nd as its long-running annual Redcoats and Rebels weekend, where hundreds of reenactors converge for 2 days of American Revolutionary War history, returns once again. The 250th anniversary of the 1776 Declaration of Independence makes this summer's Redcoats and Rebels particularly special, according to Director of Interpretation, Rhys Simmons, who said, "There's only one way you can learn where you are right now, and that's the study of the past." The historic 1830s village's year-round crew of historians in period clothing will be joined by reenactors playing soldiers from the Continental Army and British military, as well as civilian camp followers who traveled with fighting units and provided critical support. Anyone visiting the village can spend a whole day or the whole weekend watching battle and musket demonstrations and going from encampment to encampment, learning about what day-to-day and often moment-to-moment survival was like as the 13 colonies fought for independence from the British Crown. These reenactors absolutely love to talk about the history of the Revolution and all their accoutrements, whether it be their uniforms or their muskets or their tents, and really dive deep into what life was like for a revolutionary soldier and what sacrifices people made on both sides to fight for the ideals of the Revolution or stay loyal to the crown as a foreign force fighting in a distant land, Simmons said. On both days, a smaller skirmish battle reenactment will take place on Powderhouse Hill at 11 a.m., where reenactors will explain which tactics they're using and why, followed by a much larger 2 p.m. mock battle at Freeman Farm. Some reenactors will be representing Continental Army units that included Central Massachusetts soldiers, including the 9th and 10th Massachusetts regiments, and some will represent artillery units with ties to Henry Knox's cannon train, as well as regiments from New Hampshire, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. Others will be representing British infantry and artillery, and even an American Allied French regiment that took part in the 1781 siege of Yorktown, the Santage 85th. History teacher Nick Bannis is a member of the Connecticut-based 7th Regiment of Foot, which portrays a British infantry unit of the era, and yes, they do wear red coats. "I chose to portray a British soldier because as a history teacher, I like to think about things from different perspectives, and I wanted to challenge myself," Bannis said. "It gives me a much deeper appreciation for what was accomplished. When you start looking at the war from across the Atlantic, it takes on a much more global significance." After the 1777 Battle of Saratoga, where the real 9th Regiment of Foot saw combat, France and Spain joined the war on the side of the colonies, turning the conflict from regional to global. That, in turn, drove the British Empire to worry much more about the other places it occupied at the time, including many of the Caribbean sugar plantations, the strategic location of Gibraltar, and several ports in West Africa where British companies were carrying out the transatlantic slave trade. Britain had been maintaining control of incredibly lucrative human trafficking and sugar cultivation, as Bannis put it. And with France and Spain on the side of one group of rebels, the British suddenly had a new possibility to fear: war with Europe's two other major colonial powers on more fronts worldwide. Redcoats and Rebels is a highlight of each summer for Bannis and his 9th Regiment of Foot comrades, because thousands of visitors pass through Old Sturbridge Village during the weekend, which gives him the chance to talk about a subject he knows well with people who want to learn more about it. "People get into the hobby of reenactment because we like to share our passion of history, and a lot of events we go to are in remote places, a small battlefield in the countryside of New Hampshire, or a small museum in upstate New York," Bannis said. "At a typical reenactment, you may have a few hundred people, and they're not all going to necessarily talk to you." Though the military reenactments are usually one of the biggest draws at Redcoats and Rebels, the event aims to paint the full picture of what 1770s Massachusetts was really like, including the aspects that often get left out in popular retellings. "For one," Simmons said, "not everybody was a patriot. We often think about the past in a very binary sense, with good guys and bad guys, But leading historians think about a third of the population was pro-patriot, a third of the population was loyalist, and a third of the population was indifferent, Simmons said. Farmers and businessmen didn't want to interrupt their lives, and they thought of these things as foreign that didn't impact them directly. Guests can come in their 1770s best, but will be provided with tags reading costumed guest so others can distinguish between them and the reenactors. If you approach anyone in period costume who isn't wearing a tag, they'll likely answer some of your questions by talking about what life would have been like for the sort of person who would have been wearing the same outfit 250 years ago. What we like to do is talk about everyday life, because that's relatable to everybody, Simmons said. People were worried about their families, their jobs, their homes, and the revolution had a direct impact on people's homes, jobs, and families. Furthermore, Simmons said, the hundreds of reenactors who will be there will cover enough different topics and aspects of the 1770s life that anyone can find an entry point into the event. If you're interested in animals, there'll be a cavalry unit there with their horses, talking about the role horses played in the war, Simmons said. If you're interested in food, there'll be people cooking in the camps, talking about the tools that they need to support the troops. Simmons said the hidden gems of Redcoats and Rebels are the non-combat troops, the camp followers, the old Sturbridge Village's regular population of historians who portray average civilians. Just like today, some of the most unsung heroes during the conflicts are the people supporting, because it takes a lot of support, whether moving goods, cooking, cleaning, taking care of the sick, Simmons said. For Bannis, waking up early in the morning to the scent of that 1776 cooking is what makes him feel most like he has traveled back in time. On Saturday morning, you wake up to a drummer and a fifer playing reveille and marching down the rows of tents, and there's a mist that has settled over the town green, mingling with the smoke of the campfires that people are getting started for breakfast, Bannis said. You look all around, and there are people in 18th-century dress with a backdrop of historical buildings, and the sunlight is coming down through the mist and the smoke and the leaves, and you're transported. Something else he looks forward to, sharing with the public the lesser-known true stories of the war that brought the colonies their independence from the British Crown, be they happy or tragic. Right now, with the 250th, it's more important than ever for people to be curious and think critically about our foundation, Bannis said. Simmons said there's always value to learning about the past, and taking in living history in the United States' 250th year can be a reminder of the ideals that have driven so many Americans to work toward bettering their country over the decades. The ideals of the Revolution are like a brass ring we're always reaching for. Every generation, every time period, has a way to improve, Simmons said. It was hypocrisy by the people writing it, but it was a known hypocrisy. They knew there was work to be done. Today, we as a society are always trying to improve as well. So this year's event takes place August 1st and 2nd. And calling back to the first of the two cover stories, King Ralph's Renaissance Fair will be held from noon to 2 a.m. August 1st at Ralph's Rock Diner. And that concludes this week's cover stories for Worcester Magazine. Now we send you back over to Catherine for some more articles.
More Worcester Magazine coming your way with an article by Margaret Smith in the Worcester Walks column. Assabet River Nature Trail leads through woods along placid water. Imagine a somewhat hidden entrance on a busy suburban road that leads to a calming crossing of water and land. Such is the Assabet River Nature Trail under the auspices of the Hudson Land Trust, and a place of quiet scenic delights where a woodland's path of about a mile takes you along the waters and marshlands of the Assabet River, seemingly incongruously the back of Hudson High School. It's just about the perfect short walk on a full day of appointments and errands. On a warm July day, insects darted about, birds called, and a breeze ushered gentle ripples across the water's surface, stirring marsh grasses as shadows and sunlight meet placidly. If you want to explore those waters more closely, a nearby launch for canoes and kayaks is located close to the parking area. The flat path through the woods makes it one of the most accessible non-pavement trails, easy on the feet, still leading to many arboreal secrets. The terminus of the path brings the visitor to the 6-acre fossil conservation land. If checking it out, be purposeful about looking for the entrance, as it's set back a little from the road and can be missed. But when you get there, the trip is well worth it. The Assabet River Nature Trail entrance is located at 124 Chapin Road in Hudson. In the Last Call article by Margaret Smith, Lynn Wanjiku, Miss Worcester 2025-26. For Lynn Wanjiku, serving as Miss Worcester through the National American Miss pageant program means representing both her community as well as herself. The confidence she gained is part of the long journey and took her back to her days as an 11-year-old arriving from Kenya with her family in the United States, navigating a strange new world and making her own path within it. Wanjiku is a featured guest of the 4th Annual Worcester African Festival, set for August 1st at Worcester City Common. The festival is sponsored by the Massachusetts Organization of African Descendants, also known as MOAD, for whom she has done extensive volunteer work. A member of the Worcester State University's Class of 2027, majoring in public health with a minor in psychology, Wanjiku considers herself a major advocate for mental health and works with youth to boost their self-esteem to create a positive self-image. Wanjiku talked about her role as Miss Worcester in her passion for helping young people find their strength and beauty within. First of all, for those who do not know, what does it mean to be Miss Worcester? I'm Miss Worcester with the National American Miss, and I was the city queen for 25-26, and it's about to come to an end, which is pretty sad. I would say, Miss Worcester, it's a lot of holding myself with integrity. It was my first year doing pageants. Obviously, I had a lot of little kids coming up to me, so I have to hold myself up with grace. I would say that being Miss Worcester is about showcasing the community, being at events throughout the year, showing up, and being Miss Worcester. Tell me what drew you to pursuing the Miss Worcester title. So originally I got a letter in the mail saying I was nominated to run for Miss Massachusetts. That's how I got started with the National American Miss. That's how I went to interviewing and got selected as a state finalist. I ended up being in the top 10 for Miss Massachusetts titles. That's how you got to be the city queen. I claim the title of city queen for Miss Worcester. That's where I currently live. When you participated in the pageant, what were some reactions from friends and family? I would say they were really positive. I would say I'm known as the person who dressed up for every event, so it didn't come as a shocker. They were supportive in every way. They were the ones who kept me going. They were the ones who told me go. That was radiant. Because I never done a pageant, they encouraged me to go for it. What kind of time commitment is involved in being Miss Worcester? I would say definitely I need to have time management skills, because when I'm called to showcase myself at an event, I have to make time for that, especially with work and school and other commitments I may have, being there for my community, but also making sure I'm staying up to date with school and work and all that. What has been the most challenging part of being Miss Worcester? I would definitely say holding up my title, because I'm very, like, shy person, and I keep a lot to myself. So being Miss Worcester and having to showcase myself to my community, it was like how to put myself out there. So the most challenging part was gaining the confidence to go out into the community, just trying to be there, even uplifting other little kids who want to go into the pageantry. Let's talk about your community service projects. I would say I've been involved with community and doing volunteer work with MOAD with their fashion shows, just volunteering for them whenever they had an event. I called it the Crown with Me, to teach kids how to gain confidence no matter what the world throws at them, meaning holding themselves and their integrity, going to school, being faced with others' opinions. You are beautiful. You yourself are a crown and walking in that power. I collaborated with one of the committee leaders, the program that holds after-school activities called Way's New Age. It's like an art studio. The kids were drawing and drawing what they see themselves as. I had these activities. My name is Lynn. I may be this, but I'm also this. Through the whole, Miss was to process what is the greatest thing you learned about yourself. I would say doing the program, I kind of learned the power of being true to myself and not going with whatever the world thinks of me. I came to the U.S. at 11 years old from Kenya, so having to integrate myself into this new world, this new community, it was hard because it is new people I don't know at all, taking some people's opinions, but not too much of it because other people's opinions can be a little hard, especially with my sister city queens who were very helpful and helped me through this title. You mentioned about public health. When you look at careers, what do you think you'd like to do? So far, I've been leaning toward healthcare administration, especially for minority groups. For my master's, going into business analytics and being in the healthcare field. Different pageants have had some controversy about them, criticisms. What has the pageant experience been like for you? I would say for me, the program I enjoyed was like a sisterhood, because with National American Miss, when I went and did the interview, how they run the programs and all that, it was very motivating, because I found a sisterhood within that. From the little kids to the elites, everyone was very motivating and just helping each other out. I know for little kids, they tell not to wear makeup, showcase themselves as a person, not necessarily putting on an act. That's why I loved it. You say what you do in the community, who you are as a person. You are just showcasing yourself, which is what I loved about this program. I have heard the other side about pageants and other programs. I would say I found a sisterhood in it. We all hang out as friends outside the pageant. Herb Alpert to launch Hanover Music Series. The Hanover Theater and Conservatory for the Performing Arts has announced the lineup for its 2026-27 music series on the main stage. The new season of the series gets underway August 2nd with a performance by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. Alpert, 91, will be joined by the ensemble's six musicians. There will be a number of tribute shows during the season, including Staying Alive, One Night of the Bee Gees on October 1st, The Rush Tribute Project on November 12th, and Almost Queen, February 13th. The Hanover Theater also puts on Broadway and dance series on its main stage, as well as other acts. The Hanover Theater Repertory stages shows at the Brick Box Theater at the Gene McDonough Arts Center. This season, Lundgren Honda of Auburn will be the series' presenting sponsor. The sponsorship makes Lundgren Honda the exclusive presenting partner for the series, the Hanover Theater said in an announcement. A vehicle showcase will be featured at select performances on the Francis R. Carroll Plaza directly in front of the theater. Lundgren Honda has always believed that being a great dealership means being an active partner in the community we serve, said Chuck Shearns, Chief Operating Officer of Lundgren Honda of Auburn, in the announcement. The Hanover Theater plays an essential role in enriching our community through exceptional live performances. We're proud to support an organization that makes the arts accessible to so many people. We're thrilled to welcome Lundgren Honda of Auburn as the presenting sponsor of our music series, said Alan Seifert, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Hanover Theater. Lundgren Honda shares our commitment to enriching this community, and their support helps us keep bringing world-class live music to Worcester. The Hanover Theater 2026-27 Music Series, August 2nd, Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, August 28th, The 60s Show, September 18th, Britt Floyd, October 1st, Staying Alive, October 6th, the Buena Vista Orchestra, October 16th, Tusk, the classic tribute of Fleetwood Mac, the 24th, Mania, the ABBA tribute, November 12th, the Rush Tribute Project, January 23rd, Get the Let Out, February 13th, Almost Queen, and March 6th, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Tickets are on sale now for most of the shows, Tickets for Get the Lead Out, Almost Queen, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers will be on sale soon. For more information, you can call the box office or you can visit thehanovertheater.org. We have time for a few more things to do. Garden evenings and grunge tributes. Summer evenings amid the garden. New England Botanic Garden at Tower Hill in Boylston has extended summer evening hours Wednesdays and Thursdays through August 27th. In August, the garden is open until 8 p.m. on both days, so visitors can make the most of the season's long days and beautiful twilights and sunsets. Wednesday's special offerings include dinner and drink specials, a rotating showcase of local breweries and distilleries, and a crafts and cocktails workshop series. Thursdays feature live music, a craft beer garden, botanical mixology classes, and more. Extended summer evenings, New England Botanic Garden, 5 to 9 p.m., July 29th and 30th, 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesdays and Thursdays, through August 27th. New England Botanic Garden at Tower Hill, 11 French Drive in Auburn. With general admission, it's free. Otherwise, it would be $26. The Palladium upstairs comes alive. Arizona metalcore band, The Word Alive, takes over the Palladium upstairs August 2nd with nearly two decades worth of music to play, two anniversaries to celebrate, as it has been 10 years since they released their fourth studio album, Dark Matter, and a little over 15 years since their debut record, Deceiver. Joining them are Florida band Not Enough Space, Albany, New York, band Downswing, Los Angeles band Code Words, and Boston band Silent Season. What is it? The Word Alive. The Deceiver and Dark Matter Anniversary Tour, 7 p.m. August 2nd, the Palladium upstairs on Main Street in Worcester. It is $33. ThePalladium.net for tickets. You've been listening to a reading of Worcester Magazine, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Catherine Thornton, reading with Julie Standrovich. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
There are more than 1 million English words. Next up, word nerd Steph Donoff with some of them worth talking about.
Some words can be traced back to ancient Greek or Latin, or the Middle English of Chaucer's Canterbury Tales or Shakespeare's plays. Then there's codswallop. Yes, I said codswallop. If you think it has something to do with being slapped in your face by a fish, you just might be right. You see, no one really knows where it comes from. Many dictionaries do not even guess at its origin. My favorite guess goes back to England in the late 1800s when beer was often called wallop. The stronger the beer, the stronger the wallop. The story goes that a man named Cod invented a non-alcoholic beer, and it was soon called Cod's Wallop. And it meant then just what it means now. It means nonsense, absurd, or just plain ridiculous. Non-alcoholic beer, Cod's Wallop.
That's enough talk about words. Let's go back to listening to them.
Are you a senior who is dealing with vision loss? Would you like to learn about advocacy efforts on behalf of seniors who are blind? And about support calls, where you can talk with other seniors who are also dealing with vision loss? If so, join us, the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. To learn more, visit our website, www.aavl-blind-seniors.org.